Stick around until the end of today's episode to hear the opening segment of The Athletic's newest narrative podcast, The Play Callers, where Jordan Rodrigue takes you inside the dynamics of the NFL's youngest coaching family, the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay tree, with exclusive interviews with four head coaches and all your favorite sports personalities. Find all five episodes on the Athletic Football Show feed wherever you're listening to this podcast.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 56 of The Roundtable. Grant Brisby here with Mark Carrig, Andy McCullough. Mark, let's start with you. How you doing, Mark?
Well, I'm back from 5 days in the wilderness with my daughter and my gigantic family of aunts, uncles, cousins, and all that. Boy, a lot happened in that time. Holy crap. I'm catching up on it now.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Welcome back from vacation. That just a great feeling. Just a great feeling to come back from vacation. And how many Slack messages do you have to read?
Something like 85. Whatever.
Read one of them on the pod right now.
I'm sure they're all good news. Okay.
Andy, how you doing?
I'm well. I'm here in Seattle for the All-Star game. It's, it could happen anywhere, but you can only find it here. I don't know. Mark, where'd you go on vacation? Where in the wilderness?
Just confirming that Jason will write a column off the Derby. There, you asked me to read a Slack message. There it is. We're back in Northern California, actually. Yeah, in the valley. We went to a campground. It's called Lake McSwain. It was wonderful, remote, beautiful, no reception. Terrific time.
The dream. The absolute dream.
Absolute dream. But boy, did I walk back into a different world, boys. Holy smokes. Anyway.
Real quick, Andy, I have glasses on because I've got some irritation in one of my eyes. How do you wear these things?
You just kind of squint as much as possible, and you can't ever take them off because you will have bags and indents in your nose and eyes that make you feel self-conscious. And then also you can't get in contacts because your fingers are too big.
Jesus.
I really can't. I cannot, like, my fingers are like too, like, I can't spread my face open without like poking myself in the eye. So I can't wear contacts, yeah.
You got the Farmer John sausages on for digits and you can't do contacts?
I got big old mitts. Like, I can't text. You know, I constantly make typos. Like, you know, yeah, I'm just... So, the thing about my body is that I'm 6'3", 235 pounds, right? Like, if you see that, like, on a roster of a football team, you're like, whoa, that guy's a killer. That's a great stat line, unless you're 36 years old and you can barely run a mile without like getting a stitch in your side and starting to like itch 3 minutes in, you know, so it's kind of useless, actually. I don't know. People come to this podcast for body dysmorphia talk, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what the reviews are always saying. So let's talk about, let's switch.
It's what keeps him coming back, 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 back.
Hey, the Derby.
Let's talk about the Derby. Yes, sir. We are talking Home Run Derby here because Andy was there. I don't even want to say it's a lukewarm take. It's almost like an obvious take insofar as the Derby's better. The Derby is still extremely a top-heavy event to watch, where you go in and it's like all you can eat Jack in the Box mini tacos, and you're like, this is pretty good. And then by the end, you just don't want any more. Like, no one cares about the final round. At least maybe I'm projecting, but they're gassed, and it's like, oh yeah, that one went over the fence. Oh, what was the launch angle on? Wow, that was a good launch angle. You know what I mean? At first, when you're watching Julio Rodriguez just bomb, you know, that was outstanding. That's as good as one of these exhibitions can be. I just wonder if there's something to do at the tail end to, I don't know, spice it up a little bit, but whatever.
I guess the move is to shorten the event to make it just a four-person tournament. Or have it so that, you know, the first round is, you know, like a round, like a, you know, three versus three or something like that, you know, like a triple threat type of thing. Because it's just bloated. And like every year, like Mookie Betts, credit to him for like going to do it, you know, like he figured he'd give it a try. It's good for, you know, the game to have like one of its best players doing it. But he was like three swings in last night. It was like, oh, I suck at this. All right, let's get out of here. You know, but he's got to like be on TV for the next 5 minutes trying to hit home runs, like, which is a it's an excellent exhibition for the humanity of baseball players. Like when JD Martinez is like, hey man, you just got to pull the ball, and Mookie's like, I don't know how to do that. But that's not really a great way to sell the game to fans, I guess, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I mean, like, make it so that it's, you know, a four-person tournament where it's like Pete Alonso, Shohei Ohtani, Julio Rodriguez, and Vlad Guerrero every year. Maybe that's more exciting, but then it's a 1 hour of, I don't know. I get what you're saying. There's definitely, the first hour of the Derby is always much better than the second hour. No question.
Yeah, that's always when you get the Josh Hamilton and you get the Pete Alonso going bonkers. It's, I don't think there's anything, like, I'm not trying to say, oh, the Derby's broken. Because did you see the last night making the rounds? Like, people are taking screenshots of the old home run derbies on Twitter. It's like you've got a 1990, the Home Run Derby, where they split them up. So it's like National League versus American League. And the American League team had Mark McGwire, Ken Griffey Jr., Jose Canseco, Cecil Fielder as their representatives. They combined for one home run. I cannot, like, was...
What, was Greg Maddux throwing BP?
Like, it's like Camilo Duvall in from the future was throwing to them.
Well, it was the dude throwing to Alonso last night.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Did you see that? The pitch ninja put that thing up there with all of his movement. Did they give the freaking guy sticky stuff on the way out?
I mean, Pete Alonso went out there without Dave Joust, and that's what happens when you don't
have
Dave Joust.
That's the first
problem
right there.
You know, Steve Cohen's done a lot of, you know, good to bolster the Mets organization, but he let Joust leave. And you really have to wonder at what point he's going to have to answer for that.
It's like Andre going out there with that Bobby Heenan. Can't have it. Can't have it.
I would rather participate as a slugger in the home run derby than as a pitcher. The pressure of being a batting practice pitcher would scare me. I would go out there and, you know, I would look like me and make a few swings and top a few over down the third baseline and laugh, and everyone would laugh at me. But pitching, it seems like I should be able to throw a ball with repetition where it goes, but that terrifies me because I know I wouldn't. I know I would screw it up 1,700 times.
Did you catch John Schneider himself throwing BP to Vlad Guerrero? Like, the actual manager was doing it?
No, that's awesome. No, I missed that.
And there was a great tweet from the Blue Jays that just said, manager John Schneider is getting absolutely shelled right now.
He throws BP for them fairly frequently.
I guess so. I mean,
he's sort of on the younger side for managers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He's got BP thrower face.
Yeah, he sure does.
What's BP
thrower? He sure does.
All right. So I need this elaborated. What's BP
thrower
face?
No, you can see him dragging the L screen out there and setting up like the whole, like, you know, the mat, right? You can see the whole thing where he takes a couple, you know, balls out of the basket and like kind of throws it a little spot before a guy steps in.
How many is he holding in his left hand? Like how many?
Like two,
at least
three.
Two. Yeah, at least two. But he can get more in there. It's just he's just keeping the fingers loose. Yeah, he's got the sort of ruddy complexion that speaks to spending a decent amount of time in the sun, but forgetting to put on sunscreen. Like, that's BP thrower face.
That's right. It's sun damage and toughness.
do they hit fungos too?
You know, it's within the same family, but it's not the same job.
Cousins.
Like, yeah.
Can you play pepper around them?
No.
No pepper.
Pepper's out.
No pepper.
You gotta understand, the fungo, so like the fungo archetype is the guy who uses a bat as a cane. So they're walking through spring training, and they have their fungo, and they are using it to support their rickety knees, and then all of a sudden, they get to the line, and they bow up and then start hitting and just perfection every single time. And then the fungo round ends and they just take the bat back and then hobble back towards the clubhouse to go drink some leaded coffee.
Yes. You know, it's usually very bad posture.
Right. Yeah, terrible posture. Yes.
Like, you find the dude on the field before the game with the crappiest posture, that dude hits amazing fungus.
That guy.
100%.
The guy with the worst posture has been gifted at least 2 gold gloves by his best player as a trophy. They said, I couldn't have done it, you know, without David.
Right. Quasimodo has helped produce multiple gold glove winners with those fungos. Like, I mean, it's true. Like, there is, if you had a chart, you would see like the actual, you know, like the relationship between the two. Crappy posture, you know, competence with a fungo bat.
I played golf with a guy who was...
play golf?
Well, poorly. I'm getting to that part of the story.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, real quick, how could anyone dislike this stupid podcast?
Seriously. Hey, rate and review, everybody.
Go on. Oh, you don't get this dumb stuff anywhere else. Anyway, Grant, sorry.
No, I played golf with a guy who was probably 80, 85, and he couldn't take the club back far, like almost to his hip. He demolished me. Just like everything was straight and true. That guy's got some fungos. Like, I get it now. Like, he was probably. Yeah.
But that's just every golfer over the age of 80.
They're amazing.
Buck 45 and dead straight. Try it sometime, Grant. Yeah, shorten that swing, buddy.
It's not Mr. Havocamp just hitting it into the water. Oh, Dolly, I'm hot today.
All right, let's move on.
I had an all-star question. I had an all-star question for you guys because I'm curious what you guys think. There's been, you know, like Ken Rosenthal wrote about this, like Joel Sherman from the New York Post wrote about this. The idea of getting someone like Ellie De La Cruz into the all-star game, that there should be like a carve out for this type of player. Good idea, bad idea? Where do you guys fall on it?
Great idea. Should have happened yesterday. Look, golf tournaments, we're just talking about golf. They have what are called sponsors exemptions, all right? Mm. And they do it to sort of juice the field, right? If someone's interesting, for instance, like there have been times where the top women's player in the world has entered a men's tournament. Now, technically, they haven't qualified for that tournament or whatever. They don't have the card. They don't, whatever. Like, haven't hit the required prerequisites. But then the sponsor just tosses out an exemption, says, you know what? The hell with that. We want you here anyway because it is a draw. And that's what baseball should be doing. So I'm 100% for it. There's already a professional comp for it. It only makes sense. It's an exhibition game. Give the people what they want.
Just quick follow-up, Mark. Reasonable idea. Who is in charge of deciding who that player is every year?
Well, obviously the most popular dude in baseball, Rob Manfred.
Interesting that management wants management to have more power.
Okay. That's just tired. It's too early for that. We're 12 minutes in. Or 10 minutes in. Oh, come on.
I'm going to put a link in our chat.
Anti-labor stance comes through loud and clear.
The power should be with the people. It should be a fan vote.
And Rob Manfred is the voice of the people. Grant, what do you think? I mean, do you agree? All right.
I'm going to put a link in the chat. Click on this link without reading it, okay? Because if you read it, it's going to spoil it. I want the pure, undistilled reaction of you clicking to see what I'm putting in the chat. Ready? Go.
Click it right now?
Click it. Just click it.
Yes. They used to be hung up in the press box at Turner Field.
So what I put in the chat was a cover of Sports Illustrated. It is The Natural. And it's got Jeff Francoeur on there.
Frenchie.
Atlanta rookie Jeff Francoeur is off to an impossibly hot start. Can anyone be this good? And the answer is, yeah, lots of people can be that good. And I'm not saying Ellie De La Cruz is Jeff Francoeur, but I do think that there is some shine to someone who's up, hasn't seen the league a couple times. There isn't a book on them. You've never seen them fail. So, of course, they're an all-star. I would like him to be Ellie De La Cruz for longer. And then when he's there, he's probably just as exciting as he would be now. So, I don't know. Would I be upset if you were in there? Would it be like, oh, the integrity of... No. I mean, like, he's fun to watch. I'll watch him hit fungos. But...
he'd be terrible at it. His posture's too good.
Yeah, Dexter. No, he's a good athlete. He couldn't do that.
He'd probably hit a fungo and then catch it. So there you go. But I wouldn't be upset with him. I just think I'm not clamoring for him, right? I'm not a clamorer.
My first thought about that is, all right, what is Ellie De La Cruz's WRC plus right now?
It's like 120.
Doesn't matter.
Damn it.
That's the point. It doesn't matter what his WRC plus is. This is an exhibition game, and he's one of the most exciting ball players in the sport. Period. Full stop. All right. I'm not going to get into some anti-stat screed because that's dumb. But this is one of these instances where it doesn't matter what he's doing statistically. It doesn't matter if he's quote unquote earned it. The guy's on the highlights every night. People want to see him play. Period.
Let's take this to the logical conclusion. Let's say this morning the Pirates signed Paul Skeens to a contract, and they say, "Hey, Manfred, this cat throws 101 where he wants to. Let's get this guy in the All-Star game." Because right now, I'm not sure if you can get five more interesting, compelling pitchers than Paul Skeens on this planet. So do you put Paul Skeens in the All-Star game?
Got
his
ass.
Is this a real feasible thing? Because I feel like this is more...
rhetorical trick? Is this
I mean,
by your logic,
am I Ben Shapiro or Charlie Kirk out here?
Sponsors exemption is where I go. All right, and if somebody who will put asses in the seats or add to the excitement, then I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Actually, I think I'd encourage it. I've kind of for a long time thought the All-Star game has been treated almost too seriously. It's an exhibition. It's an exhibition. It's a celebration of the sport. So if you want to get goofy, this is the time to get goofy. That's my thought on it. So, you know, that's why, I mean, I'm being kind of a smartass about that. It doesn't matter what the guy's stats are. But in this case, my real take is not that far off from that. All right. Like if they're exciting, let's put it the other way around. Let's say it's an aging star, someone who clearly does not have the numbers, but they're right at the end. Everyone knows it's the end. They didn't make the team. To me, it's time to send that guy off.
They did that last year.
Right.
Right? Didn't they do that with Pujols and Cabrera last year?
Yeah. So, you know, what's wrong with that? I thought that was great.
Yeah, I love that.
I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with it. I do, I don't know. Why does the idea, I don't know. Ronald Acuna Jr. is everything Ellie De La Cruz is as a player and more. He just, doesn't steal home. there's going to be very exciting players in the game tonight. There's going to be Corbin Carroll. I don't know, unless you're specifically putting Ellie De La Cruz there to as a pinch runner. You know what I mean? It's not like the NBA All-Star game where look, if you put the guy on the floor, something fun's going to happen. He might just, get struck out by Gerrit Cole or something like that, which I guess whatever, that's, you can't control the outcomes.
But I think, Andy, he's facing Gerrit Cole. That's the point. I think All-Star games, again, this is one of those where, it's a baseball thing. We take it all too seriously. You want to get as many cool players on the field at the same time as humanly possible because you never know what's going to happen. I guess that's where I stand. All right. The more of those guys that you get in there, then great. Now we're not talking about some reliever who's having a good year, right? Who's getting there on merit or whatever. But most of these relievers aren't going to move the needle like that, right? You want someone who's just going to move the needle. So, I mean, I think even if you go up there and the outcome is a strikeout, Mike Trout struck out against Shohei Ohtani. That was the outcome of that at bat. Okay? I don't care. It's more about who faced who.
Oh, I forgot about that. Wow, that was so long ago. I was what are you talking? When did Mike Trout face Shohei Ohtani in the All-Star game? By the way, Grant, you said five more interesting pitchers than Paul Skeens. I mean, come on, buddy. How about Robert Stevenson, Kevin Kelly, Sean Armstrong, Zach Littell, and Jake Diekman? Five members of the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen. Let's go.
Hey, would you like some Robert Stevenson trivia?
Always.
We're related.
Treasure Island?
No, Robert Stevenson is, I think, a third cousin or something like that. Wow. On my mom's side. Yeah. In fact, I just put up pictures of said camping trip and his mom liked it on Facebook.
Oh, that's nice.
This morning. Yeah. So how about that? I've been in the clubhouse with him three times. I don't know him at all. It's weird to go up and say that to someone. So I've never once interacted with
him. Yeah. That's a tough one if you come up and you're like, "Hi, Mark Carrig from The Athletic. We're related." And he's like, "All right, man. Cool. God, nice to meet you.
Now get out." Yeah.
I'd do it. Yeah. Why do
you? No, man. That's
your cousins.
Weird.
Come on, man.
You do it. When's the last time we're in the clubhouse?
Me?
We must, you and I must be neck and neck.
Ooh, yeah. It's been a while. said. Like I, it's like Giancarlo Stanton might have been on the Marlins.
Wow.
Yeah.
See? Wow. See? You guys aren't missing much.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. One more great product from LinkedIn. You're there to network, you're there to look for jobs, you're there to post jobs. And how about LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/baseballshow. That is linkedin.com/baseballshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/baseballshow and get started.
Everyone's talking about it, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this. Daniel Cavey. He's a high schooler. He's about the 223rd pick in the draft. I thought he was going to go day one, day two because of the power potential. But it seems like he's lasted at least 10 rounds. Can someone buy him out from his commitment to Miami on day three of the draft? Mark, go.
Are you making this up?
No.
Too sleepy and tired to know if this is like a work or a shoot right now. Which one is it? He's working us, right? Andy, this is a work.
I don't know. You never know with Grant.
It's all good information. I just gave you the deets. All right, no, we're not talking about draft. I just wanted
to... We're big draft heads here.
I don't give a damn. Except for there's a dude named Carrig that got drafted, so that was cool. Cousin Cole.
Oh, yeah. Taken
by the Rockies as a catcher from San Diego, I think.
An extra R and an extra G. It looks like if Andy were drunk on the podcast, it's like, oh, Carrig.
Well, you should see the text.
The question is, when is there too much rig in Carrig?
Guess we're going to find out when Cousin Cole gets
it. Cousin Cole is putting it to the test.
Giants drafted a guy named Maui Ahuna, and I'm just going on
Come
record.
Come on.
Yeah. Just
What's
going,
his name?
Maui, like, you know, Maui, Hawaii. Yeah. Ahuna.
So a strong Irish boy.
Yes. I think it's Ahuna. Sorry. Yeah, no. He
went to Greenwich Country Day School.
Yeah. Scrapping Irish lad from Greenwich Country Day.
I feel like we've been robbed. Stubby Clapp should have been a Hall of Famer, right? We need a new catfish hunter. We need a new superstar with a name that you get used to, like Maui Ahuna. So I'm pushing for that. We are done talking about the draft officially. So what do you want to do? You want to do first half review, like your surprise of the first half? Do you want to do your disappointment of the first half?
Oh, no, we can't. We've agreed that we're not talking about Buck Showalter this episode. So we can't do this. We made a solemn vow to not do another whole episode on Showalter. So
hard pass. Let's go. Next.
I think my surprise is I think there's going to be some really interesting division races in both Western divisions. I think the Rangers and Astros is going to be pretty fun down the stretch. The Astros, obviously, you know, have the championship pedigree, all that. They've taken a lot of hits, but they're still right there in the mix. And the Rangers play a really good brand of baseball that is enjoyable to watch. They seem to be, you know, they're one of those teams that, like,
a lot of things are going well and they're building off that. You know, they're a bit ahead of schedule in terms of, you know, their window for contention. And then in the other Western division, you kind of have a similar, you know, sort of race with like the upstart Diamondbacks, who had been in first place for quite a bit and had, you know, recently fallen off, and going up against kind of, you know, the juggernaut Dodgers, who are obviously not the juggernaut that they have been for quite some time. So you got, you know, kind of wounded colossus against upstart teams. I think that's a fun, you know, I like that because, look, like the races in the two central divisions will be close. And maybe, you know, Brewers, Reds, like that could be kind of fun because they are, you know, the Reds are, you know, theoretically exciting, but like the AL Central, you know, cheese and rice. And then the two East divisions are kind of, they not, well, I mean, the Rays are kind of slipping, but I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the two Western races down the stretch. I think that'll be fun. And it's been nice to see, you know, a team like Texas, who has really, you know, quote unquote, tried in the past two off seasons, you know, have success. And it's also nice to see, you know, the D-backs, a team that have tried in a different sort of way, but have really built a sort of, you know, a thing that looks like it's almost sustainable, to see them rewarded as well.
No, I agree. And I wrote something a long time ago for SB Nation about how the Rangers and Astros in like 20, 30 years, you're going to look back and that's going to be not as big as Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, Cardinals, Giants, Dodgers, but up there is a rivalry that you're paying a little bit more attention to. And all it needs are just games. It needs seasons. It needs seasons like this, because that seems to me like a really cool rivalry in the making. Rangers, Astros, you just need to be, you need both of them to be good at the same time together and doing exactly what they're doing, bashing heads together. It would be a little bit cooler in this specific scenario if there were an unbalanced schedule and you saw them a ton all year. But even without that, I think it's just really cool. Rangers, Astros, button heads. The Mariners, I do think the Mariners are going to make a little bit of a charge, but Rangers, Astros, to me, just finally, they're again in direct competition with each other.
You know, it's my understanding that those clubs legit didn't like each other for a while, right? Like, just not just the players, but I guess the front offices too. I don't know if that's still the case or not, because there's been some turnover there. But
battling for the soul of Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, like I'd heard, you know, like anyway, maybe that's old news now, because again, there's been some turnover. But we're looking at surprises. Not a surprise here at the round table. The Boston Red Squints. Two games off the wild card.
How about also, that? Also in last place. But also yes.
Isn't that amazing?
But yes.
But like they are two games. They've won five in a row coming into the break, right? Like they've turned, like, you know, you squint hard enough and you can see it, boys. And they are within reach of that's a surprise. You know, I guess I'm surprised that the A's have maintained their 118 loss pace, you know, despite they have fought through like competence for like 3 weeks to get back to what they've been doing. So that's kind of surprising, because it's really hard to lose all those games.
But the dude, Royals are right there. I mean, the Royals
are right there.
The Royals, yeah. Might be the disappointment. Man, oh man.
Didn't we talk about them being interesting?
Well, they're not.
They're not interesting right now.
I don't know.
See, I actually think they're uninteresting and they stink. And it's the worst combination.
Yeah, they're kind of getting into, they're drifting towards Rockies territory.
There you go. That's exactly right. They're occupying the same neighborhood at this point.
Real quick, Red Squints point. Lovely moment yesterday at the media availability. Kenley Jansen was asked, the Red Sox closer was asked, you know, hey, Kenley, like the trade deadline's coming up. You know, I know you guys are in last place, but you've been playing good baseball. You're in the wild card hunt. Do you want to see the team, you know, buy or sell at the deadline? And he was like, oh, sell. Definitely. We need to sell. And he goes, I'm sorry. I meant buy. Oh, my gosh. I meant buy.
That's so good.
Kenley is just like, he's such a wonderful fellow and he's so enthusiastic. He's like, oh, my bad. So bye. We're good. Like, you know, it was just, I was just thinking like, wow, this is kind of a cool little story. Like Kenley says, give up. But it was, he just misspoke in the funny, but he did it with such like confidence, you know, that's what makes Kenley the best.
Oh man. I was like, when you said that, I was like, how did I not hear about
right.
this?
Right. You'd be like, wow, that would have been a big story. But hey, that's a closer mentality. If you make a little mistake, you just power through it. And you're like, no, cut her up. Let's keep going.
You turn to your second baseman, you go like, you know, like you walked or you hit the guy and then it's like, no, I'm going to double this guy up.
I informed Kenley that he was the oldest pitcher at the All-Star game. And he was like, why do you always do this to me?
What's he really? I pegged him for 34, so he's older than that, I guess.
He's 35. Yeah, there was. I think there were four 35-year-olds. I think JD Martinez is the oldest player there, but you know, Kershaw's 35, Alex Cobb's 35, and Craig Kimbrell is 35. But Kenley, I believe, is the only 1987. So don't check me on that. Who cares? But anyway, yeah, the Royals, man. It's tough. You know, it's tough. It's
one of my predictions for the second half, which I'll just get in early, is that the division winner in the Central is under 500.
I was thinking about
fun.
That.
Yeah.
I think I just want to will that into existence because it's funny. I don't buy any of these teams making that push to get over 500, especially with the balanced schedule. There's a fun point from the Cespedes Barbecue Boys yesterday that Julio Rodriguez had more home runs in the Derby than the Guardians had all year. They had 60 home runs, which is not great. They're the leaders. They're 500, and they have just no power. No power.
How many teams with a winning record get pushed out of the playoffs when a team with a sub 500 record makes it from the Central? Right? How many, right? Like when you look at like the bracket at the end of the day, how many of these, you know, red squints get left there?
I think it's right? I think it's one, right? I mean, I think it's just a one for
Couldn't
one.
Couldn't it be more than that? I mean, now, like there's three plus, there's three 500 or better teams out of the playoff picture right now.
Right. But Mark, doing the math, only one, if the Central can only occupy one playoff spot. But I get the point you're making. How many teams should be annoyed by this? Like probably three or four. Yeah. The general point is valid. Like if you're playing in the American League East in an era of the unbalanced schedule, you're going to be frustrated about it a lot because you're going to be winning most of the time. And like, I mean, you're the Red Sox. They're in last place and they are probably like the sixth or seventh best team in the, like they're the eighth. Never mind. But anyway, the point is they're a good team that if, you know, they were like 500 miles to the west would be in first place, you know?
I haven't taken a spin on their baseball reference page in a while. They don't have one guy going bananas. It's a very, everyone's having kind of a solid season for them, at least in the outfield. Like that's their MO. Masataka Yoshida is so fun. I'm bitter at all the scouts who were saying, like laughing at the Red Sox for signing that contract, because I wanted the Giants to sign him to that contract. And I think a lot of people wanted him, and he's just exciting as heck. I just want to throw that out there in the pod. No point. This is a pro Masataka Yoshida podcast.
Let's do some highlighting some good work real quick. Jed McCaffrey had something near the beginning of the season about the job that the Red Sox scouts did on Yoshida. Worth looking at now, especially that you've had like a first half sample. Can see this guy belongs in the major leagues. Deserve credit for that. You know, doing their homework, getting their looks in, and being convinced that this was a dude.
Who do you think is the best player who gets traded at the deadline?
Oh, that's a good question. All right. It's probably going to be because the worst teams usually sell. So it's probably someone on the A's. Let me just look at their.
Stop.
Oh God.
Leave the A's alone.
Ooh. I know. My goodness.
Who would it be? Mitch Keller, maybe?
Mitch Keller. What a time to be alive.
Mitch Keller.
Oh, the Pirates stink again. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't notice that. Everyone yelled at us for saying we don't take them seriously.
Come on. I mean, they were fun, but that was so
I forgot
early.
About that. I mean, you got yelled at.
Everyone yelled at us.
We did. We got scolded for that.
Everyone scolded us when we said, look, it's fun, but, you know, you look at the underlying stats. Sorry for using data.
Facts don't care about your feelings. Lucas Giolito, that's probably a good one.
Yeah.
That's sort of been on the board, I feel like.
That's
on, the last
yeah.
month,
you know, because it's like Bieber, Giolito are the two guys who are kind of, you know, thought might go. Bieber, his peripherals are so spooky that like, if the Guardians aren't getting the max out of him, I don't think there's many teams that look at Shane Bieber and are like, well, I mean, that team's clearly not using him properly.
One weird trick. Also, you're talking about the first place Guardians, just to be clear.
I mean, yes. But
juggernaut
like,
first place Guardians.
They're the Guardians. They'll happily, you know, deal at the deadline. What about Josh Hader?
Can you pull the trigger? boy, AJ Preller. I mean, he's been up for the last 107 hours in the lotus position, levitating off the ground. So, like, yeah, he could be thinking, yeah, this is, I'm going to get some of my gains back, because the Padres farm system decimated because they've acquired players like Josh Hader and Juan Soto and stuff like that. So maybe, I just don't see them as being, especially with the extra wild card, I don't see them throwing in the towel. I just don't. I just, they're too invested. The crowds are too good. You know what I mean? Like, the vibes are too good in San Diego. So even,
are they still?
Still. I mean, they're still getting people out. I wouldn't say the vibes are good. I'd say the crowd, the energy's good.
They're second in the NL in attendance. Yeah.
Almost 2 million. I'd like, did the Padres draw 2 million from like 1977 to 1980, like total? I don't think they did. Like, that's just off the top of my head. But you're not necessarily thinking that your goal is the World Series at this point. You've almost given up on that. The goal of an interesting September means so much to the Padres this year. So if they can make a little run and just get fans invested for September, a little proof of concept, that has a ton of value. So you can talk about playoff spots and wildcard spots and championship dreams, but just being interesting in September means so much to the Padres. I don't see them selling.
Man, I'm with Grant there. Yeah, that's a great point, man.
I wonder, I mean, given that they did all that last year, whether there's diminishing returns. I mean, clearly, I mean, as right now, no. I mean, they're the ballpark is full, like whatever. I'm just wondering, you know, if you do the math and you're like, okay, we're four games under, we're not a good baseball team. Best case scenario is, you know, like the third or fourth, how many wild cards there are now. I don't know if you can get a lot for Josh Hader, but you know, you have to at least listen, but probably not. They'll probably trade for Ohtani or something. I don't know.
Here's the thing. So I have, like I mentioned earlier, I've got my glasses on, which means I'm allowed to do this. Pythagorean win-loss. Where do the Padres rank in Pythagorean win-loss percentage in the National League?
Probably 12th, 11th.
1 through 15.
Yeah, 11th.
I'll say fifth. I don't know.
Third. They have the third best run differential in the National League right now. 49 and 41. They should be, by rights, second place, in clear position for a wild card. Is that the true talent level of the team? Man, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how I got this job.
That was the thought. That was their true talent level.
The question is always to me, right, with a team like that, are they capable of reeling off multiple 9 of 11s, something like that? And the answer is, yeah, I think so. So, you know, is it likely? No. But is it something that you can envision them doing? Yeah. And it's not, you don't have to squint particularly hard to do it. It just hadn't happened for him yet. I didn't realize a run differential was that good, actually. Did not realize that.
I've just been waiting for them to just kind of get that thing unstuck. But to Andy's point, I think there is a path to buying at the deadline minimally while also selling Josh Hader, just because that is the crown prince of you're going to get a ton of prospects back. And there's a way to thread that needle.
Right. I mean, it worked for the Brewers last year.
And, you know, the Padres clubhouse is apparently like a happy, jolly place right now, too. So, like, you know, adding that element to it couldn't possibly screw it up or, like, you know, mess up the mix or whatever.
We're all on the record that Ohtani's not. We don't think Ohtani's going to get traded. Just checking in here, July 11th, they're 45 and 46. They're five games out of the second wild card. Will Shohei Ohtani be traded?
No, they got to buy.
They gotta buy
like right now. No time like the present. Empty the farm. What are you doing? You're gonna lose Ohtani. You're a useless organization anyway without Ohtani. Buy.
Jeez, Grant. Tough crowd. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they could buy that changes the end game. I don't know what they have to sell. You know what prospects, the capital they even have at this point, but.
You could trade Ohtani to get prospects to get Lucas Giolito, and then you've got Giolito next to Ohtani in the rotation. If you figure out that missing step,
yeah, there's
that's
a,
how you
there
do
is
that.
There is a fourth step in there, I think.
Well, figure that out.
Yeah, right. That's the old question mark profit. Yeah, I don't know. It is, we are drifting towards the most dispiriting endgame here for the Angels, right? Like, they miss the playoffs. he leaves, and you just sort of wonder, like, what is, you know, what is the point of getting up in the morning? Or he could resign with him. I don't know. He could also resign with him.
I'm not going to rule out
Ohtani resigning with the Angels until he puts on another team's uniform.
I get that. I just...
And anyone who tells you, otherwise, definitively, no one knows what this guy wants. No one knows.
He came over, like, he could have waited, 2 years to get the payday the team's fighting tooth and nail for him and giving him nine-figure contracts. He said, no, I want to challenge myself now. I'm going to make the minimum for a couple of years. Like, well, whatever. I'm Shohei Ohtani. I'll get my payday someday.
Yeah.
And he was right. He'll get $1 billion. And everyone who's like, oh, Dodgers, who knows? He just might have a hankering for Italian beef and want to be a Cub for life, or he just loves sweating, and so he might want to be in Miami or Houston or something. You know what I mean? Like, he might just love humidity. Who knows?
You got to understand, right? Like, when this guy was coming up in Japan, there was not a lot of enthusiasm for him doing both things, right? For being a two-way player, right? There was not a, he was basically told you can't do this. He did it. When he came over to America, you know, there was a lot of people writing, myself included, like, no chance that this guy can pull this off. It's too hard. And he went and did it. And now there's a lot of people saying, you can't win with the Angels. Who is it to, you know, he might look at that as like, no, actually, I can do that. Now, he might just be like, actually, no, I want to play for the Dodgers, a good team, you dummies. Like, why would you think I'm so mysterious? I'm like every other free agent. I just want the most money. That's certainly possible. But no one knows. Getting in the predicting game with him is kind of a fool's errand, because he defies our sort of imagination in every way, I feel like.
I think that is Heyman.
Stop. Brian.
Producer Brian says that John Heyman has reported the Giants have signed Brohei Ohtani.
Stop. I disavow that joke.
Same.
Oh, I don't.
I do not approve this message.
The round table has gone too far.
I made an Arson Judge reference in my latest article. Like, come on, that's forever. No one knows what he's going to do. I just think if you have lived the Angels experience, and by which I mean it's the tungsten arm O'Doyle experience, you've lived that, you've been a part of that, and you can't win with Mike Trout as your wingman. Man, I don't know what can familiarity, sense of closure. I don't know what would keep you there over just the idea of, I have a limited time on this rock and I have to experience some sort of joy in Major League Baseball, which the Angels are not providing.
Maybe. And maybe, you know, there is a general belief that he cares about legacy, right? That matters to him. And one of the reasons he came over to America early was because he wants to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, right? Okay. So maybe he wants his legacy to be the first $700 million player. And, you know, so he goes to the Mets or what, you know, whatever crazy number, you know, Steve Cohen's willing to give. Giants. Yeah, sure. Sure. Giants. Yes. Yes. You know, maybe he wants to be the first, you know, $100 million per year player. And Andrew Friedman's like, finally, proof of concept. We just don't know what it is. I understand the point you're making, Grant, about how, like, we have limited time on this rock, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, his brain doesn't function the way our brains function. And we don't, and that's, you can say that for a lot of athletes, but, like, he also doesn't reveal what he's thinking. I mean, he's, like, very guarded and very, like, does not tip his hand really in any way. And so it's a mystery, you know, it's going to be really fascinating. But all I'm just saying is, don't rule out the Angels. I could be wrong. I'm an idiot, but, like, whatever.
I just have this vision of him sitting down for a meal, and it's a meal he's never had before, and it's got noodles, it's got protein, it's got spice, and it's just different. It's just different. And he takes a bite, and he's just like, this is familiar and yet just completely exotic, and it's Skyline Chili. Yes, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I knew, yes.
And he's just like, man, what are these guys about? And you've got Ellie De La Cruz, and you've got a Reds. Their pitching's not so hot this year, but they've got some pitching savants in that organization. I don't know, man. The Reds would be a great fit for Ohtani.
Could you imagine him tucking into a bowl of Skyline chili and showing up at the complex the next day? And they're like, dang, his velo's down 5 miles an hour. What the hell happened?
Oh, no.
Great idea, Grant.
I'll never forget being in Cincinnati one time when I was still covering the Mets, and they had Skyline chili in the press room. And myself and Andrew Kay from the New York Times were eating it. And Kay turns to me and just goes, I'm just eating this for energy. The only purpose of this meal is just calories so my body doesn't shut down.
Perfect.
Oh, Skyline chili is perfectly fine, by the way. We're going to get more, you know, rate and review.
Stop. Hate. I know. Seriously. Enough. Come on. Stop baiting these people.
My co-guy on the Giants beat, Andy Baggerly, generally skips a lot of the Midwest trips like Cincinnati, St. Louis. And I want to take his place. I couldn't do it this year, but just to try Skyline chili and St. Louis pizza, which has processed cheese on it.
I'll go to Skyline chili's fine. St. Louis pizza, everyone should be jailed.
I got to try it. Because I'm the kind of guy, like, when it's like pineapple on pizza, man, throw anchovies in with the pineapple and I'm eating it. Like, I like a melange of flavors on my tongue. So,
you know, just what we need. More people in the comments talking about how we're coastal elite. Like, golly.
I have a longstanding feud with the people of St. Louis. They really dislike me.
All the Kansas Cityans are just like going crazy right now.
Well, the Kansas
City
people
are running through the wall for Andy.
They're
right
like,
now.
Andy remembers us. He loved his time there. It wasn't sad.
Kansas City. One time I went to a barbecue place. There was then a gas station. Can you imagine such a thing?
Yeah, Kansas City barbecue is good.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, one of my long running bits on Twitter was people would ask, what was your favorite barbecue in Kansas City? And I would always say the Cheesecake Factory on Country Club Plaza. And it would just make they would just get so mad. And be like, what? It's great barbecue. Have you ever had the burned ends at the Cheesecake Factory? Anyway.
I don't remember that bit, but yeah, damn, that's a good one, man.
It's a good bit.
That's
sometimes
'80s heel heat right there.
Sometimes back when Twitter was still like a functioning website that, like, you know, you could like your mentions actually made sense. Like, people would just take pictures of the Cheesecake Factory on Country Club Plaza and be like, I'm at the Mecca at by McCullough.
That's so good. That is so good. One of my very first Twitter jokes, and I was like really upset that it didn't do better because I thought it was just a great joke, was that, hey, I've got a great idea for a restaurant. So you know the Cheesecake Factory, right? What if there's a place called the Diarrhea Factory that served good cheesecake as opposed to the Cheesecake Factory, which gives me diarrhea? And like, not enough retweets and likes back in the day. You guys don't even like the joke. It's a great freaking joke.
I can't even imagine why that joke didn't make
it. I'm searching Twitter for this. Just bear with me.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We haven't done that in a while where we've looked up our old tweets about stuff. Maybe next week we'll...
We're like 47 minutes in.
Should we spell diarrhea?
Next week, let's come up with a list of like four random players from 2014, and we'll look at our old tweets and just be horrified again. That was a fun bit last year.
That's a good bit. We got to get back to that. Like, what was I saying about R.A. Dickey? You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, I'm sure I just have some just idiotic stuff about Brian LaHare or something like that.
All right. Mark can't spell diarrhea, so we're going to let this be a time to end. It's got four H's and two R's.
I can certainly write it. I just can't spell it.
All right. This
has
been...
That's not writing. That's typing.
Episode 56 of The Roundtable. We will be back next week. I will not be back for the next 2 weeks. I'm going on assignment. We've got, at least for the first week, Katie Wu filling in for me. That should be awesome. But I'll never know because I'll never listen. Talk about me. tell the people what you really think about me, fellas. All right. We will be back next week. Thanks so much for listening. See you then.
I was very wrong.
If you stop anything in this league, there's something else open. Always. So how do you tie that shit together? How do you get the quarterback to it?
The voice you're hearing belongs to San Francisco 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan, and he's rolling.
I'm a product of my environment. Oh, I had to change that shit pretty fast.
He's in a chair behind his desk, and it's not doing a great job of containing him, because as he starts to talk about football and designing a scheme and calling plays and how, in his very strong opinion, all of that is supposed to blend with the players, he's practically rattling.
Not everyone can do everything, but they better be able to do something. Whether it's the receivers, the quarterbacks, and you keep hammering that stuff and you make people defend it. When they defend it, where's the other hole in the defense, and who has the best trait to attack that hole, and how do you balance them out? Do you have a guy who can find that stuff? If he can't, how do you get him to go through stuff that he'll get to it? Well, then you only put in two plays, because it's number one's going to be wide open when it's the right coverage, but when it's the wrong coverage, it'll be so covered that number two will be open, and that's when he's going to go to number two. But don't just tell him to go to number two. Don't make him read the coverage. Make him go through a process of how to get him to there. Or you got a guy who's can just see everything. Kyle, I always go to number three versus cover three. I always go to number one versus cover two. And this is the throw here. It's like, all right, well, let's start talking to you differently. But hey, yeah, that doesn't help that guy either, though. Because you just went to number three. Well, yeah, you said it's good versus quarters. Not everyone plays quarters right. That mic fucking went with your eyes. Now number one was, there's a situation for everything. Each mic's different. Each play's different. That's why when people say, like, I learned someone's offense, are you coaching that somewhere?
One entire wall of Shanahan's massive office is a dry erase board. It's covered in plays and handwritten notes to himself, and a couple of swipes as if he's gotten pissed and dragged his hand across certain ideas in frustration.
Are you just, that's like, what are you, the water boy guy who left his yellow book somewhere and now we have all your secret plays? Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, that's not how it works.
Every play on Shanahan's dry erase board starts as one color. Then he draws over the top of it with a different color, which represents a different variant to the same play. Then another, color after color. Each of the layers interconnect and create a vivid mess that somehow makes so much sense, it's almost three-dimensional. Welcome to the inside of Kyle Shanahan's brain.
I mean, I hate to say this, my life, because I know when I die, the first thing I'll think about are my loved ones. So that's obviously not my life, but shit, after that, that's all I can think about.
This is The Play Callers.
My biggest fear, if you talk to me as a 14-year-old, would be the life of an 80s rock star, which is to achieve success and then be on that downward trend. We were so young and went through some really great moments, but went through some challenging moments. But like, we just wanted to get better at football because we wanted to help our players get better.
I'll tell you what, there's nothing more lonely than when you're not having success and you are the play caller. Because it's easy when things are going good, everybody has an idea. When you're not having success on offense and you're calling plays, you're like, hey, can somebody help me? It's like crickets on the headset. That's just the way it is. It's a lonely feeling. It's a lonely world.
That's Miami Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel, Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay, and Green Bay Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. They and Kyle Shanahan are the faces of the NFL's youngest coaching family. They all spent their early years together, collaborating to build an offense that borrowed from the old and introduced the new.
Each one of these guys sees the game like an AI screen. All of these coaches have the same principle, but they all have their own stamp on it as well.
They all became head coaches at unprecedented young ages and began to shape their own identities in the most high-pressure environments in sports.
Sean McVay got hired in Los Angeles. People were like, really? Because he was so young. The tree wasn't established as kind of the NFL's go-to hiring bank at the time.
Versions of their offensive system have now spread across a third of the NFL as their respective coaching staffs are pilfered annually. Having a piece of them is synonymous with scoring points.
There's a lot of other owners who are just like, okay, like, I want to get the next Superman play caller. You know, I want to get someone to touch Sean McVay. I want to get someone to touch Kyle Shanahan. Because they've won. That's another thing. They've won ball games. I mean, that's an important thing. We can't leave that part out.
They have 19 playoff appearances between them, a couple of division and conference championships, and even a Super Bowl win.
Sean McVay gets the Gatorade bath after five seasons. The Rams were built to win the Super Bowl, and they have sealed the deal.
Yet these four individual coaches are fated to forever be connected to each other, even as they are always ruthlessly competing and attempting to establish their own individuality. They're competing to be first movers in an ever-changing league, and even competing against their own minds, in obsessive pursuit of perfect answers within an imperfect game.
There's not a fucking minute of any day during the calendar year that immense responsibility I ever wish to be somebody else's, you know? It's an all-encompassing thing that I feel pretty fucking fortunate to be a part of. I mean, it's pretty fucking amazing you have a microphone giving a shit about what I'm saying.
I'm Jordan Rodrigue. I obsess over football for The Athletic. A few years ago, I saw something at a Sean McVay run practice that helped me understand how the game collides with itself and how the people, especially these people within it, collide with each other. Football is action and reaction, biology and sociology and evolution. A game, yet with the highest stakes and demanding of a deeply human toll. We're watching these guys and the teams they coach live it all right in front of us with an openness that is kind of startling, if you know where to look.